welcome to Commander Central. Today we're going to be talking about Sunforger, a card that for some reason has a clown on it throwing a broken croquet mallet. Despite that art direction fail, we're still going to discuss it. I am Dana.
I'm Max.
And I'm Chris.
And it does, like, if you look at the card, that's kind of what the Boros Legion
It's a Wojak soldier, yeah.
But it looks, for years, I was like, I didn't read too much into it. I thought there was like a jester or a clown tossing a croquet mallet. That's what I thought the art was. Now Chris is looking it up, I think.
I totally am, because I don't remember the art looking like that.
It is a clown.
I don't know.
I literally looked it up too when I read the notes last night. I'm like, what? And I'm like, okay, yeah, I can see it. Yeah, it looks like a really bad.
I guess I'll humor Dana in his skewed perception on art.
Is that the Hammer of Bogarden he's chucking?
It was supposed to. I actually read a little bit about the card. It was supposed to represent Thor's hammer.
Okay.
It's not, you know, Thor, but like that's what it was supposed to essentially be, was Thor's hammer. I'm not sure why they did everything else in the card, but that's what it's supposed to functionally play like. So anyway, we will be talking about Sunforger today, a little bit later on in the show, and we have a small deck tech to do at the end. But first, how's it going, guys?
It's cold.
It is cold, but yeah, you don't mind the cold.
No, I don't. It's just cold, though. It's now it's winter.
Yeah, I can no longer do that thing where I'm like, we'll still have a few 60-degree days in this fall, because number one, we didn't this fall. It's been a lousy fall, but at this point, this is just, winter's just here. This is what it is. You can't kid yourself anymore. However, I did pull up at Max's house to record, and Chris is hanging out outside. I'm like, don't you have your key? And he's like, no, I'm just hot. I just want to hang out in the cold.
He's actually trying out for the new Jay and Silent Bob reboot, so he's practicing loitering.
Sure, he was kind of loitering very Silent Bob-like outside.
$15, little man.
I almost went through the whole thing with you.
It wouldn't be the first time we've done it.
So any fun games for anybody this week? Max and I had a long game.
A 2.5 hour long game, and I got kicked out at the 2 hour mark.
And it wasn't particularly like, it wasn't, because I've played long games where it's miserable because no one gets anything done. There was enough stuff going on back and forth. It wasn't terrible.
No.
But it was long.
Very long.
What I will say to you, not to you, the people in general, we probably should touch on this a little bit more on deck techs, although I think we do. Have a win condition. Know what you're going to do to win that game. Because I think part of the problem in that game was we had a couple people that didn't know how they would win with those decks. And sometimes you can get away with that. You can like get to that point where you can just outvalue people and win. And you don't have like a super specific win condition in Brago, but you do have soft locks, and you do have times when you can generate enough value, you can just get through for lethal or shut everyone down.
I do have enough big creatures there to beat face in, or else, like you said, I end up eventually just locking the game out through an Archaeomancer, Rift Lock, or I Sun Titan, Strip Mine Lock everybody.
But like we came down to because one of the decks was an Angus McKenzie deck, and it wasn't entirely Turbo Fog, but there's a lot of fogs in Angus. So between that soft lock and kind of a control, Rammus Dragon Engine deck, and Brago's pretty control-y, it was just the perfect mix for a game where just nothing got accomplished. And I was just trying to fish for, at the end, I had a big Multani out and something else that was big. And I was just trying to like dig down and hit Chandra's Ignition. Because like then the fog can't get past it. So I was like just hoping, trying to find my chance to Chandra's Ignition and hit everybody for 25. And I didn't get to it in time. So it just wound up being a long slog of a game.
Was there no way to win with that Angus McKenzie deck or something?
Not really.
No.
The last one that I played, it may be Turbo Fog for the first 30 minutes. After that, he just wins the game if you don't kill him.
Yeah, if you don't have, because he would Planeswalker you to death. Yeah. You just couldn't deal with all those Planeswalker ults. The Tamiyo won, and this was not that. I don't know. It's also a new deck. The player playing it is somebody I've played with enough. He's a smart guy. I think he just hasn't got to that point in the deck where he's figured out how he's going to win. So it just wound up being pretty terrible.
The first thing I got to figure out with the deck is, how do I win?
Nowadays, I do way more than I used to. I mean, I was guilty of that once upon a time, too. So nowadays, I pay way more attention to that.
Yeah, blood bond, done.
Right,
game
exactly.
Over.
There we go. Torment of Hellfire, all my decks. I'm back. It's back, baby.
Yeah.
I had a come-from-behind game with Sphinxes again, where everyone's like, oh, that guy's perfect, not a threat at all. So that deck did its thing. A Core Haven kept me in good shape though, because I got hit early on with Aurelia. So it wasn't the Aurelia deck we did a deck tech on, but the person who was playing the deck had listened to our show on the Aurelia deck tech and turned her Avacyn deck into an Aurelia deck.
Oh no.
And it did play pretty good, because pretty quickly Silverblade Paladin came out, so Aurelia was double striking. So I got hit by for 12 damage off Aurelia really fast. And then I luckily I hit that Core Haven. I could buy time to, you know, then it became pointless to swing at me with Aurelia. So everyone else was taking Aurelia shots for 12 to the face.
Oof.
And it bought me enough time to get myself safe. The one comment I will make on that deck is about Cyclonic Rift, about that game and that deck. I was playing really well up until the end phase. I got that Core Haven out, and I was just being really, really careful to make sure I could deal with Aurelia. I had Polymorphous Jest in hand, too, so I was trying to keep mana free to deal with whatever problems came through, playing very carefully. I had everyone in a good position. I was going to win in a turn or two, and then I drew Cyclonic Rift, and I was able to just go, oh, now I don't care. Now I can do whatever dumb stuff I want to do, because Cyclonic Rift lets you be a terrible player and not have any consequences. But it kind of does. Like, that's what Rift does. It lets you, like, not have to work.
Yeah, I suppose. So I like saving my Rift whenever I play it for the turn I'm going to win. It's pretty much just saying, you know, this card's going to win me the game, so I'm going to sit on it.
And in this case, it was a situation where I was going to win anyway. It just made that so I didn't have to worry about anything. Right. It was just a guaranteed way to make sure I don't have to be careful about Core Haven mana now for that Aurelia. If the person doesn't attack me, I can just mass bounce the whole world. And that's what I wound up doing, because I'm like, I'm just going to swing at somebody else now. I don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, I mean, I tried casting mine in that game with Brago, and it ended up getting countered, but
right.
I had enough stuff on the board where I was going to win the game or eliminate at least two players with everything I had on my board. And then it got countered, and Ramos swung at me for a million.
Well, so it then raised a question in my mind. I came home the next day, and I'm like, do I want to pull Rift? Because I don't like it. It's not a fun card to cast. But here's the difference between that having the Torment of Hellfire discussion. Looking at Torment wins you games. It's a perfectly good card. But I can pull Torment out of a deck, and I feel like there's probably things I can put in that deck that still win me games, and maybe in a different way, but are also like really good cards. I'm like, if I pull Cyclonic Rift, every card I would put in that slot is worse than Cyclonic Rift. Like, there's just nothing I'm going to put in that hole in that deck that I can legitimately tell myself, oh, the deck's perfectly fine. This is a logical swap. Every card's worse.
Yeah, I mean, Washout's worse.
Inundate's worse. Evacuation's worse.
Aether Eyes and Aether Spouts.
Even another board wipe is worse. Particularly in that deck where I've already got Supreme Verdict. I already have Austere Command. So I have a couple board wipes already anyway. I just feel like that's the interesting thing about Rift. It's one of those cards where it's just never not worth putting in your deck. Even in five-color decks, it's great. Because it's only one blue. Like, there's no situation where you say, oh, this is, I'll pull Rift because of X, and you can make a case for it. It's just always good.
Yep.
I'm not saying it should be banned, but it just like that really kind of, between me being able, it enabling me to be sloppy, which I don't love, and then me like thinking about pulling it and having the mental thought that, oh, there's any choice I make is worse. So I thought that kind of just put into context how super strong that card is. Not that anyone didn't already know it's super strong. So did you see any MVP cards getting played that night, Max?
Yeah, I did. Rurik Thar is a monster.
So Rurik Thar is whenever you play a non-creature spell, you take 6 damage?
Yep.
And every player.
And he has Vigilance and Reach, and he's a 6/6, I think.
So he's a big beastie body.
But he
body
has to
anyway.
Attack each turn.
Yep, he does have to attack each turn.
But he has Vigilance, so you're probably kind of okay with that. And even if you go to remove Rurik Thar, you take 6 damage.
Right. I ran up against a Rurik Thar deck this week, and it hosed how I played Dromoka, because I also was facing a mass discard deck. So the few spells I was drawing were hitting me for 6. And Dromoka's only gaining me 5 back.
Sure.
So I'm always taking a net loss, essentially, every turn if I cast a non-creature spell.
I think it's also one of those decks, though, when it works like that, because I've played Rurik Thar a couple times, it is an absolute bear to deal with. But if you are that person that gets in the right place at the right time and you just drop like a Darksteel Mutation on it, then their whole deck falls apart. because the deck is so much reliant on keeping everyone in check from playing anything while you play a deck that has 150 creatures in it or whatever it is. However, that deck is probably also running Reclamation Sage and running a few things like that that can deal with enchantments.
And that's exactly how it dealt with a Lignify. Yep. So.
Yeah, that's a really strong card. I didn't see anything that really popped out at me this week as an MVP card other than Rift being just a beast. What's the fairy that you run in Brago?
Gwenalendra Archmage.
So I saw a Gwenalendra Archmage in one in a game after the one we played, but you had it out in that game too. That card's always a pain in the butt to deal with in Commander. Number one, in Brago, when you can blink it and get the counter off it.
Right.
It's a huge pain. But just the Rattlesnake counterspell is really, really nice.
Yeah. I mean, it against that Turbo Fog deck, it bide me a couple turns because it's, does he want to try to fog knowing I'm just going to activate Gwenalendra and then bring her back and then blink her and then do it again.
Yeah, that's a card that everyone knows is a good card, but in that deck, it's fantastic. So that did a lot of work, even though you didn't win the game, and it did a lot of work in the next game as well. So if you want to tell us what an MVP card that you saw, where would you find us?
On Twitter, at CMDR Central. I'm William Shatner, by the way. you can also find us on Facebook. Search us up, CMDR Central. Find us on YouTube, searching CMDR Central. And you can find us online at www.cmdrcentral.com.
And we are also on Patreon by searching CMDR Central. And we have three new supporters to give a shout out to this week. So we want to say thank you to Thomas Menard, Brody Mickle, and Austin Honadell.
Thank you all very much for supporting the show.
We should probably talk about the contest for this month.
We certainly should.
So for our Twitter giveaway, if you retweet any tweets with CMDR Thank in it, you'll get entered to win the comically oversized Ajwan Jaguar, which we will take a picture of tonight and maybe post on Twitter so people can see it.
I do
as
have a
Chris is Vanna Whiting it around the room
for nobody but Max and I.
Ding!
I remember the days where she actually turned the panel.
Right?
Right now she just comes out and like taps it.
Yeah, it's like a bunch of mini iPads right there. So that would be the contest for this month on Twitter. Our Patreon contest, so if you become a patron supporter by the end of November, or continue to be one, you'll get entered to win a Die Hard dice set. I posted a picture of that on Twitter the other day. It might not be that color. That'll be random.
Okay.
But that's exactly what you're going to be looking at. You're going to get all those dice in a nice little tin box. They're really nice. Chris uses them. I use them. And more people are actually...
I've seen a lot of them in our shop
lately.
In
the shop.
You can also find some cool singles online at flipsidegaming.com.
Yeah. Use promo code CMDR in all caps and you'll get 10% off your order. And it helps us keep the lights on here sometimes.
Yes, indeed it does.
Yep. You can go get your Cyclonic Rift.
You can, right.
That should be banned.
I just bought an Amulet of Vigor through FlipsideGaming.com from Amina and Den deck.
Why would you need that?
Because I've got so many things. Number one, I got a bunch of fetches that go get my Shockland, obviously, but stuff like that. But as well as like Splendid Wreck brings the lands back intact, things like that. So I'm going to try it out in that deck.
Okay, makes sense.
All right. News this week, the only thing that really came down, and everyone out there listening probably already seen the Ultimate Masters box topper cards that were sent out to people who bought the...
Or tried to buy, right.
The Guilds of Ravnica Mythic Edition,
correct.
I believe, right? So it's 40 cards. So first of all, there's two things. There's the Ultimate Master set, which is going to be coming out in December.
December 7th.
And the full spoilers will be out Thanksgiving week. So it's basically a super master set because it seems way thicker with good reprints than the average master set. And in addition, there's 40 box topper cards. So basically it's the buy a box promo. Every box will come with a sealed box topper that you don't know what it is. And it's one of 40 different cards from this reprint set. And of those 40 cards, like 37 of them are really, really good expensive cards.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe Kitchen Finks you don't want, or Stirring Wildwoods, or...
Lava Claw Reaches.
I think Lord of Extinction isn't that expensive. But the other, like, 35 cards are all really heavily played staples in some format for the most part.
And majority of them are Commander.
Yeah, it's a really very Commander-centric set, it felt like. And there's some cards, it's a new art for three quarters of them, I feel like.
Yeah, that I would agree with that.
So the Manland cycle from Zendikar got reprinted, or was it World Wake? I think it was World Wake.
Whichever one Colonnade is in, so World Wake.
Okay, so that cycle got reprinted, and just a bunch of other things like Demonic Tutors in there. And
Mana Vault,
Noble Hierarch, Tarmogoyf again.
Karn.
Yeah, it's fantastic stuff. So is there anything you guys really liked out of there or that you are glad to see getting a reprint? We're not going to spend more than a few minutes on this, but it's worth touching on briefly. I myself, the only... I want the Urborg, I think, to my Yawgmoth, because there's the M15 version. And there's the Time Spider one that has the same art. And then there's a... Is there a From the Vault?
There is a From the Vault.
It's fine. The original art is fine, but then I think the new art in that new frame looks really, really fantastic. So that is the one I am looking forward to for my own use. But just a lot of the cards getting reprinted, it's nice seeing them get reprints.
It was really nice to see Demonic Tutor finally getting a reprint.
Yes, finally.
I really don't think it's going to impact the price much.
Is it Mythic or Rare?
It's a Rare.
Well, that's okay. So that's decent.
But
because Vamp Tutor's been Mythic the last time or two, was got reprinted, I think.
Correct. It was Mythic in EMA. But I mean, I still don't think it's going to drop the price that much, maybe for the first couple of weeks, but I think both versions will just go back to up where they are now at the 50-some dollar range.
Yeah, man, it wouldn't surprise me. Ancient Tomb getting a reprint at Rare is nice.
Yes, at the Rare slot.
Because that could have easily been a Mythic. It wouldn't have shocked me to see it as a Mythic. So anyway, we'll get the full spoilers, and I'm sure we'll do a little bit on that once the full list comes out. All we have is the 40 box toppers right now, but I mean, those 40 cards are more impressive, I would say, than any Master set we've seen so far by a decent margin, and there's still a lot more stuff they haven't revealed yet.
Right.
All right, let's talk about a card that at least so far was not in Ultimate Masters. That's Sunforger.
I hope it's not.
So we've never done a show on a card before, and this was kind of a spontaneous thing. We talked about Sunforger a few weeks ago when we did Dr. Mike's Aurelia deck tech. And right after we all agreed we didn't like it, I went to the shop 5 days later on Commander Night and played against actually the deck I mentioned that wound up getting turned into Aurelia. It was a Archangel Avacyn deck. And the player, she had a Sunforger in the deck, and it wound up doing quite a bit of work. So then it got me thinking about Sunforger, and they're like, you know, we all didn't like it. Let's talk about it and see if we can do a Sunforger show. And over the course of doing prep for this, I've changed my mind on Sunforger. I like Sunforger now. I know Max doesn't still like it. So how about you, Chris? Where do you fall?
The jury's still out.
All right. Okay, so we have Chris who's undecided, Max who still doesn't like it, I who have came around on it. Max, so first of all, tell us what Sunforger is.
Sunforger is an artifact equipment. It costs 3 to cast, 3 to equip, and it has an activated ability for a red and a white, and you unattach it, and you may search your library for a red or white instant card with converted mana cost 4 or less and cast that card without paying its mana cost.
So you can unequip it at any time.
Right.
Equip, however, it can only be done like usual equip speed stuff during your main phase at sorcery speed. But it does give a creature +4/+0. Oh, that's not nothing.
Sure.
So why do you not like it? Make the case again. Max is like, I guess, whatever.
Yeah. So the first time you use it, you're going 8 mana to cast a 4 mana spell for free.
So it's 3 mana to cast, 3 to equip, and then 2 to use. So you're investing 4 mana for that first spell.
Yeah. You're investing 4 extra mana for that spell, whether it's a Path to Exile, which only costs 1, or
Swords to Plowshares.
Swords to Plowshares, or Teferi's Protection. You know, you're losing mana, essentially. Yeah, you don't have to pay for the spell, but you're still losing, in my opinion, you're losing mana, you're losing your resources just to cast that spell. And it's, in my opinion, it's a very reactionary card. Not, you aren't proactive with it. You are always on the defense with that card.
For the most part, yes, particularly because Boros tends to have a lot of kind of defensive spells.
Right.
You're not going to get a Berserk that you can use mid-combat to change the outcome of combat damage for the most part. You're not using it to go get a Hatred or something. It tends to be used defensively or responsively to deal with a problem. Not always,
right.
But often enough. Okay, so what else? Or is that the main problem you have?
Those are my two biggest problems, is the fact that it's so mana intensive. Even once you start using it again, now you're still losing at least one mana because you have to spend five to get something at four or less. And then the other part is, it's, in my opinion, it's a very defensive spell where I don't want to have to rely on that to save my butt from an Alpha Strike or something.
Chris, why are you undecided on Boros?
I changed my mind. Max's argument is so weak over here.
Dang it.
And I'm thinking about this logically in my head right now, and I'm like, wait a minute. Why would you use it as a reaction? Why not just equip it and sit there? And at the end of your turn, at the end of the next turn, you just go, oh, two mana, I'll go search something.
Because you
then draw.
But you have to cast it. You have to cast it.
So if there isn't a great target, you put yourself in that position where if you don't burn the unequip, which is fine, you can just leave it unequipped, and then it comes back around and you take your normal turn. But it's nice to utilize those two mana to re-equip it for three and be back in that position again to get value out of it every turn. You can sit on it, but it's also nice to, if you've done all the work to get it out and equip it, you kind of want to utilize it for things. And unlike if it was in green where you're like, oh, I didn't have a chance to go get whatever, I'm going to burn it on a crop rotation that I can go use to turn this basic land into a Nykthos and tap for seven or something. There's nothing that I can think of top of my head as an instant speed that you can really go get in white or red that's going to let you do that, aside from Tithe.
Risk factor.
Or risk factor, too. Sure, you can get some value out of that. If you're running risk factor,
very
which
true.
Chris is. And Max
Abzan
is.
Charm.
Yeah.
In Abzan, yeah. Well, that's the other thing.
I have a huge list.
So that's basically was my argument against it as well, Max.
Yep.
The other thing I will note, you probably need a certain density of instant spells to justify it. If you're just running Path and Swords and, you know, Wear and Tear, I don't think three spells in your deck is enough, particularly since there's a decent enough chance you've already drawn one or two of them.
Right.
So I don't think it's worth having unless you've got a particular density of spells. I don't know what that density is, but you know, I know it isn't four spells because, Max, do you know how many spells you have in your Tajik deck that qualify for Sunforger?
Well, I don't care because I don't run Sunforger.
Well, you have four, I checked.
Yeah.
So if you put it in your Tajik deck, it probably wouldn't be enough.
Right.
Chris, do you know how many spells you have in your Alesha deck that it would work with?
That list is outdated.
Maybe about five.
Four. Based on the list, the current iteration, it's four.
Okay.
So you're in the same boat as Max, neither of your two decks.
Swords, if Swords is in that version, Utter End, Anguish I'm Making, and something else.
I think it was Chaos Warp. I think it was the other one.
That would be.
And I went back and looked at my Edgar Markov deck, which is no longer together, but I had the list, and it was five in that deck. So it wasn't anything that was, I wouldn't have ran it there either. However, it's pretty easy to get to, like I went back to looked at Dr. Mike's tech we did. He was, I think, at nine.
Yeah.
That's pretty deep. And then the deck I played against this week that became Aurelia, after our game, we had like 15 minutes to kill. So she had took her deck apart and like broken up by CMC because she wanted to make some changes anyway. So she was like asking for advice on what to move in and out. And I think she had 11 spells that worked with it.
Nice.
Now, at that point, that's, and a lot of them, granted, a lot of them are like one CMC stuff, so you're not saving as much as it is if you're casting Return to Dust or you're casting Teferi's Protection. But at that point, I get why she was running Sunforger. That's a lot of stuff you can go get.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's why Max doesn't like it. I'm going to make a little bit of a case for Sunforger here. So one of the reasons I started reconsidering this a little bit was that same player said, when we were talking, having this conversation a little bit while she was playing it, she made the point that, well, it's kind of like draw in Boros. And it took me a minute to like, I had to think about it. And I'm like, well, yeah, you're in Boros and you're investing resources in a card. Yes, it's a decent amount of mana, but you're also casting that spell. I mean, there's bad cards we run in Boros to be able to get draw. Staff of Nin isn't a great card outside of Boros, but in Boros, you're like six mana draw a card every turn. It's twice as much as Phyrexian Arena, but it draws me a card. That's a doable thing. And in this case, yes, you're spending the mana on casting Sunforge or equipping it, de-equipping it, but you're getting a card. And then every turn after that, you're only spending five to get a card. And plenty of times, if you're casting Teferi's Protection, Well, you're only spending one then, essentially, because the card would cost you that much to cast anyway.
Right.
Or Return to Dust. You're spending five on Return to Dust for the equip and the de-equip. Well, it's going to cost you four. You're really only losing one mana in that exchange, and you're able to go get the thing you need to solve your problem. So that takes me to the next step is, yes, it's primarily defensively used, but it can also solve a lot of problems. It basically is a wild card that you have out in place that says, okay, when someone plays a creature I don't want to deal with, why is there an Elish Norn in the field when that dude just played a Kamahl Fisticrossa? Someone should have noticed that. It lets you go solve that problem. Or if you're playing against, you know, that token deck, and you're like, that guy might drop a Crater Hoof. Well, you can feel confident that if he does, you can go grab that Dawn Charm, or that, well, I guess Dawn Charm would work, like Holy Day or something, that would fully fog and keep you from taking damage that turn. And if it doesn't, if they don't drop it, then you could still burn it to go grab Tithe to get a land, or go grab Return to Dust to still deal with two artifacts or enchantments. So it does give you a good amount of flex, even though it's used defensively. And if none of those things happen and someone board wipes, go grab Boros Charm or Teferi's Protection. So I think if you are running enough cards to justify it, it does give you a whole lot of options to respond to a whole lot of situations. Maybe not what it would in different colors, but I think it's also Boros, like being able to do anything.
Right.
Being able to do anything on Boros feels pretty good.
And maybe you're right. Maybe it is just the fact that you need to find that sweet spot of spells.
I think you don't run it in Tajik, and I didn't have it in Edgar, but I think there is. I think if we had one of those decks that had the amount of spells, I would definitely reconsider it, because having seen someone else with that deck, it made me reevaluate it.
So we're missing the big picture here.
Okay, so what's the big picture?
This is awfully close-minded thinking.
Yes.
All on Boros.
Yep, for sure.
I was getting there.
Right, yes. We've been focusing on Boros.
Yes.
But
yes.
Here's the important part about Sunforger.
It's white or red instant.
White, red, but not white and red instant, or not just white or red instant.
Right.
It can be three colors. It can be four colors. It can be whatever.
It can mean 15 colors if they eventually go that far. You mentioned this before when you mentioned the cards in your Wester deck, Anguish Unmaking. Anguish Unmaking is a white instant spell. It's a white and a black instant spell, but it's still a white instant spell. So if you're playing other colors, you can then go get those cards.
Yeah, when you wanted to do this, I looked through, and with the Ramos build that I'm building, it actually makes me want to change it from my budget version to more of a tweaked version.
Okay.
To run Sunforger in a five-color deck.
Any particular cards that you want to grab with it that you liked?
Artifact Mutation, Aura Mutation. I mean, all of those cards. You got the Abzan Charm, Jeskai Charm. They're all multicolored cards.
Yep.
That trigger Ramos.
But they have the right colors in them.
Yep, but they have the right colors.
Being able to go get those three-color charms and put three counters in Ramos while also casting a spell and tutoring is really, really nice in that deck.
Yep. The other thing I was thinking was you can go for, is it Enlightened Tutor?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the instant speed one. You could go for like that. You can go for...
Is Gamble?
I was trying to think if Gamble was... I don't think Gamble's instant speed.
I will look.
I don't know if it is either.
I mean, like I mentioned, Risk Factor. That's another sorcery speed or instant speed spell that gives off.
Gamble is sorcery speed.
It is, okay. So you couldn't get a Gamble. But still, there's a bunch of counter spells that count because they have red in the color. Let's see, you have Counter Flux, Double Negative, Essence Backlash, Ionize, Suffocating Blast, Render Silent, which has white in it. So there's a handful of counter spells you can actually go get if you're in the appropriate color mix here. And you cast those as part of the de-equip, as part of the de-equip. So essentially, it lets you two mana up any one of those counter spells if they're in your deck in response to a thing.
I will agree with this point that I think Sunforger is better in not Boros. And I think it's strictly because of Boros is when you're locked into red and white, your overall selection isn't great.
I think that the
your
cards,
better cards are sorceries.
The cards you can go get in non-Boros are... is way more interesting than what you can get just stuck in Boros.
Right.
I would agree with that for sure.
Yeah, so like, because when I was reading through the notes and I got to the part about multicolored spells, I'm like, exactly what Chris said, I've only really equated this card to Boros.
Yes, yeah, for sure.
But in Alesha, in Ramos, like it makes sense when you do have all those instants from that are multicolored where as long as they have red or white, I agree with that. I think it's great in that, in a five-color deck, when it's all spell slinging, great idea.
And even in things like if you're playing in Naya, Second Wind Clans and Eldrami's Call are instant speed tutors to go get a creature spell, and you can go just go get those at instant speed. So fire those off too. So yeah, I think when you branch out past just Boros is where things get very, very interesting.
The way I look at this card is you have to have a package built into your deck. And the package that's built in the deck can't be hindering to your gameplay if you don't find Sunforger, though.
You have to find that perfect balance of running cards, but not just running cards for Sunforger. Because if you're putting bad cards in your deck just to get them Sunforger, that's also not great.
Yep. The other thing, and this may be way off the box thinking, and something that I've been contemplating, seeing if you guys ever wanted to do a show on, but actually, what if you made a deck where Sunforger is actually the true commander of the deck?
Kind of the hidden commander of the deck. Well, that's what the player who I was playing against, that's what she said. She's like, it's an Avacyn deck, and now it's Aurelia, but she's like, Sunforger is kind of my secret commander. If I have that out, the deck is so much better.
Yeah.
So that was one of the things that made me that comment also made me kind of reconsider Sunforger. So yeah, that's kind of a fun thing you can then do.
Yep, because you could pack your deck full of tutors that go for artifacts or other stuff,
right.
And you go for that, and you go, you guys got something, otherwise I'm just going to start going ham every turn.
I think you might want to be in Jeskai, because there's a few tutors in blue that let you go get artifacts as well.
I'm still thinking five color.
Oh, I think five color.
I like five color.
You want to be
Ramos for sure, I think, is makes a lot of sense.
He's colorless, so he comes out, and then you just go for that. And
all those those charms are instant speed
and
qualify. Are the commands instant speed?
Yes.
Are they?
Like Jermolka, command.
Yep,
they're all instant speeds.
There's quite a few combat tricks you can grab too, like Master Warcraft, Deflecting Palm, a Hallowed Moonlight, something you could go grab if somebody's...
Yeah, they're all defensive combat tricks.
I did
the math with it. You really don't want to be unequipping a +4/+0.
Correct.
For a combat trick.
Well, that's the other note
Unless
I have here.
Unless you could get Tainted Strike.
Right.
But well, you can't.
Oh, shucks.
But that's the other note I had here. Max kind of like blew off the +4/+0, and it isn't that amazing necessarily in a lot of commander decks, but like First Strike in Alesha deck, Alesha's a pain in the butt. Was she a 3-2 with First Strike?
Yep.
Having her be a 7-2 with First Strike, 3-2 kills a lot of things with First Strike you wouldn't think it does. 7-2 kills everything for the most part with First Strike.
Bring it, Rukhthar.
Nice.
Right, right. And then you have the de-equip option after combat to then go get something. But there's a lot of Boros commanders. Like, again, we're focusing on Boros heavily because Boros tends to need the most help. But Akali Lineslinger has First Strike. Edgar Markov has First Strike. Max's old deck Lycia has First Strike. And the new Tajik has First Strike. So that also makes a pretty big difference in those commanders. And talking about Aurelia, we talked about putting Aurelia on a two-turn clock. That puts Aurelia on a two-turn clock, even if you are just using it for that purpose. Aurelia goes from being the 3-4 to a 7-4 with two combat steps. That's 28 damage. That's definitely enough commander damage to kill somebody.
For sure.
So like that is an easy thing to ignore and not think about the ramifications of +4/+0, but it's not bad. I think that's pretty
useful.
The
one thing that I didn't look up, and you guys can correct me. Dana, actually, you would be the perfect one because you actually built the deck around it. Are any of the extra combat step spells instant speed?
There is one that's instant speed, but I think it costs too much to go fetch.
Okay.
So I don't think you can go get any.
I wonder if it'd be another little cute shenanigan to go, oh, I attack, and they're like, okay, no, whatever, no blocks, I'll take it. And you're just like, wham, surprise! Yeah.
I wonder if I don't think there's a way to do it. The closest you would have is Master Warcraft that lets you choose what creatures block. That's 4 mana, you could go grab that, but I think that's about it. But yeah, that would be fun if you could do it.
See, I also like the idea of going for Chance for Glory, the new take another turn, all your creatures become indestructible.
Sure. Yeah, at that point in time when the person thinks, of, oh, okay, well, I'll survive this combat step, you just go get another extra turn, and that essentially gets you there. Max, have we convinced you? Or do you have a counter case back to make now?
I don't have a counter case. I am more convinced than I was when I started prepping for this show.
So
I still don't think it's the best card in the world, and I think I'd rather just run something else over it.
So I will say this in your defense. I think, based on my experience with Sunforger, people probably run Sunforger too often in Boros decks because they haven't sat down and looked to see how many cards I can get. They've just heard Sunforger's great, and they saw somebody else use it to go get a Boros charm to save themselves and thought, oh man, that's so strong, I should put it in my deck. And unless you have probably 8, I would guess. Maybe it's 6, but I would guess closer to 8, if not more, spells.
I'd rather have upwards of 10 plus.
If not 10, right.
If you're in Boros, you need to be 8+ if you're multicolored, anything red, white, X. I think that number can maybe be a little lower because you have more options.
I think you're probably right there too. And I think maybe if you're playing something where you can go with the blue counter spells, that maybe changes it anyway, because having that flexibility to go get your counter spell or go get a removal spell or whatever, that might help. So I think number one, I think you're right. It doesn't go in every deck. It's probably overplayed. Number two, I think, like we said, you need to know what you're going to go get in your deck. I also think it requires you to know what's in your deck. Not only do you have to have a plan in terms of I'm running 8 spells or whatever they go get, you need to know what those spells are when you equip that card and you leave that mana open. You need to know what you can go get to solve what problems. You don't want to be going, I'm going to unequip Sunforger and let's see what's going on in the middle of combat while everyone else waits while you flip through looking for
the exact answer.
Did I run a Holy Day in here? Did I run a Comeuppance? Did I run a Teferi's Protection? You should know what you're going to go get and have a plan for it, which I think is also something people maybe don't do a great job at.
I'd agree with that. I don't think this is a beginner level card.
It is not. I would agree with that
but
as well.
It gets printed in pre-cons.
Yes.
So it's portrayed as a beginner level card because, yeah, it +4/+0 is nice,
mm-hmm.
but those pre-con decks don't have 8 instants in that are
right.
red or white for you to go grab.
I also think it encourages you, not only is it not a beginner card in terms of playing it, a lot of the best spells to go grab aren't beginner level spells. All of those counter spells that have red in them are not commonly ran counter spells. So like that's not something I bet a lot of people are playing this in, maybe some Jeskai decks that don't even realize they can go grab a counter spell because they've never even maybe seen some of those red ones before. Or don't even know white has access to some old fogs at 1 mana at instant speed. So it also rewards you for knowing some of those old cards. And if you don't, if you're just like, well, I can go grab my 2 white removal spells, I can go grab Swords and Path, that's probably not enough. So my final verdict on Sunforger is I like it more than I did in the right deck. And then I look back at Dr. Mike's deck, I think his deck could support it. So the deck we teched when we're all like, ah, I don't like Sunforger, and we agreed. I think reevaluating it, thinking things through, looking at how many spells he's running, it's playable in that deck.
Oh, I don't want to hear him rub that in our face now.
See, my argument to that case is going to be that they could be better instants that he has in the deck.
Yes, right, yeah. For sure. Yes. But we went over which ones I would upgrade those to, and I think if you made those upgrades. And one other thing I would point out, Mistvale Plains is a land that you can get that lets you put a card in your graveyard in the bottom of your library. Mistvale Plains, being a plains, is fetchable with Tithe, which is castable off Sunforger. So you can Sunforger, if you have a Tithe, and Tithe isn't cheap, Tithe is like $15 now. But if you Sunforger Tithe to go get a Mistvale Plains,
you just reload your deck.
You can then reload. So that's an interaction. If you are running it, it's worth skipping your morning Starbucks for a couple trips and getting yourself a Tithe before that card goes up any further. It's on the reserve list.
I don't know who you're playing with that doesn't play Graveyard Hate, but that's never going to work.
Although, even if you're playing, like, I've had those games, and I'm sure you guys have too, where you're like, I've got 5 pieces of Graveyard Hate in this deck, and I know he's got 4, and no one's seen it for 7 turns. Like, I've had those games. On the other hand, I had a game this week, I should have mentioned this earlier, where came around me to turn 2, and I'm like, well, I'll drop a Rest in Peace, and I played it, and then the person who was playing, is it
Azani?
Azani was like, oh, so I guess I'm done. And he had a removal for it, but he didn't hit his removal either. So like there are times that also works as well. Okay, Sunforger. That's our final conclusion. I've came around it. Max came around it a little bit.
A little bit.
Chris has a little bit too. So
now I want to see this Ramos Spellslinger deck.
I
want to build it as a Spellslinger deck.
I really want to see it.
No, yeah, the gates have to go in.
That's fine.
I need a Sunforger now, though. I know I don't own any.
I think Max has one here.
Right behind us.
All right. So the last thing we're going to do here is a mini deck tech for John's Tribal Not Thrill Endrixar Master Breeder deck. Endrixar Master Breeder Mono Black EDH. So before we looked at the list, what were you guys' thoughts about that concept, first of all?
Thrall Tribal.
Even though it strictly
says not Thrall.
Before I even looked at the list, knowing what this commander does, I instantly went, this is going to be a stacks deck.
That was my assumption as well.
I'm like, and I am so happy.
And there's some stacks elements in it for sure. But it's not like a hard lock stacks deck. Enric Sar is one of those cards from early days of Magic that's actually good as a commander. There's not a lot of them from the first half of the game's history that are legends that are good. It's a perfectly good card. And it's, for those that don't know, Enric Sar, Master Breeder, 4 mana and a black. So, I mean, 5 mana is not awesome, but it's not terrible. Legendary creature, human wizard. And whenever you cast a creature spell, put X 1/1 black thrall creature tokens onto the battlefield, where X is that spell's converted mana cost. When you control 7 or more thralls, sacrifice Enric Sar, Master Breeder. So you have a limit on how many thralls you can get out, but as long as you have a way to continue to sacrifice them, you can keep making them by casting creature spells. So I ran this in my Taysa deck. I did a lot of sacrificing for value in that deck. Do you have it in your Regnan Croft deck, Max?
I do not.
Okay.
Because I have other things that...
You don't need it. You think?
I don't need it. Okay. Yeah.
So I assume stacks as well. Chris was thinking Thrall Tribal despite the name. Max was thinking stacks. So looking at the deck, what do you think the plan is here?
Overwhelming value.
Yeah.
This is a value town deck with stacks elements. There's a lot of old cards in here as well.
That's an understatement.
Some that are expensive. They're like, there's an Abyss as an enchantment in here that's, you know, a lot of money. I don't even know what it's at nowadays. That's a lot of money. But Gate to Phyrexia is also in here, which is just a cool old card that I don't know if is that good, but I respect anyone who's running it.
It's artifact removal in black.
It is.
It's also a sack outlet.
It is. Yep. I actually asked him about it, and we'll touch on that in a few minutes. So we'll get to the enchantments. But first, how about the land base?
This is a question I ask everybody. And I know we've answered it before, and I'm just going to shoot it out there again. Why run Urborg in a mono black deck?
So I think the thought process is, at this point, you've got enough non-basic lands between, you know, Cabal Coffers and Ghost Quarter, whatever, that being able to hit Urborg and turn those into lands for Cabal Coffers.
I suppose. So there's 11.
The thing I would say is, because I ran it in my mono black deck, my mono black Draenor deck, but I had a lot more mana doublers between Extra Planar Lens and Gauntlet and Cage of Sun and whatever. And I don't, there's Gauntlet of Power in here, but this deck is not nearly as focused on big mana as mine was. So I don't know if it's strictly necessary, but it's there's also not a lot of downside to it.
Yeah. I don't like helping opponents. There have been so many times
I've seen it burn. I've seen it burn people before.
Yeah, someone goes Urborg, you're like, yes, I need a double black. Yeah, right. And it's just like, uh-oh.
And it does combo. It helps with the Hecatomb, an enchantment where you can
four
tap
black cost.
Yep. But you can just tap and untap Swamp you control and ping someone.
And it is nice. Like, there's enough, you know, in the average, because there's 12 non-basics in this deck. If you are playing a game and you've got to turn 8 or 9 or something, and you happen to draw your Cabal Coffers, there's a pretty good chance 2 or 3 of your lands are non-basics, and being able to get an extra 3 mana off Cabal Coffers is pretty nice. The one land I would think to maybe put in here, I don't know if I would put it in place of Urborg. I think Thespian Stage is maybe worth considering, and the reason I say that is because neither Cabal Coffers nor Cabal Stronghold are legendary. And there's not a lot of downside to it. There's always something cool you can copy. But especially if you happen to have Cabal Coffers out and you draw that Thespian Stage, like, oh man, two Cabal Coffers is absolutely cheating.
Especially if you're playing Torment of Hailfire.
Exactly.
Or Exsanguinate. or
just playing black. There's just enough stuff you're going to do in this deck, I think, that that's one I would consider. But I don't know what I would pull. He's got 3 land removal spells, which I like. Maybe Blighted Fen. But I bet in this deck where you're already removing a lot of stuff, Blooded Fen probably occasionally just really wrecks somebody.
I actually am not a fan of Cabal Stronghold because of the basic clause on it.
Yeah, but in this deck where it's mono black,
and he has 25 of them,
if you're getting to turn 10, you probably are tapping it for 3 or 4 mana. That's pretty useful.
In addition to the 3 that it's costing you
to spend. Well, I mean, you're tapping it for 3 or 4, you're spending 3, so like...
You're not netting much.
You're not netting it unless you're up to 4 or 5.
I mean, it does tap for a colorless, so that is
There's no downside good. To it, really.
Right.
But the amount of times it pays off is probably not that many.
It's probably a good bait card, though, too.
Sure.
For land removal.
Yeah.
Play that over your Cabal Coffers, and they're like, oh no, mono black, here we go.
Particularly if you've already got three lands out, and they're like, oh, that's going to be a problem in two turns, I got to deal with it now, yep. And then you play your Cabal Coffers, maybe. Yeah. I've never seen anyone use it. Like we see a lot of mono black decks in the shop, and I can't say I've ever seen it be a problem. I've seen people play it and it make like two mana above the cost, but I've never had it feel like Cabal Coffers, or like I have to deal with that or I'm going to lose this game. So it's fair, I guess. I'll see if we can get some feedback on how well it's worked for him.
Yeah.
How about artifacts?
I'm surprised there's no expedition map.
Just to go get one of those lands.
Yeah. I mean, there's a Phyrexian Tower in here. There's a Volrath Stronghold. There's a Westfell Abbey. I mean, that alone is going to get you a win con.
Westfell Abbey is a great inclusion as a land. So having that as an option is nice. I skipped over it the first time. I don't know how I missed it, but I was like, how is there no skull clamp in here? I just like my eyes just dance past it. I'm like, wow, that's weird. And then I'm like, oh, there's skull clamp. Okay, never mind. Because this is the perfect deck for skull clamp. Artifacts, there's a lot of sack outlets. I like Spawning Pit a lot. You don't see that not nearly enough as a sack outlet. One thing I like about it is there's no real downside to it. Like Altered Dementia doesn't have a activation cost either. You can just sacrifice a creature. Target player puts a number of cards equal to its power on top of his or her library, from his or her library on top of the graveyard. So it mills somebody for each creature you sack. But I've seen there's situations where the person who has Ultra Out is like, oh, I want to sack this creature, but these are both graveyard decks. And they're like, they have to either mill themselves, which they don't want to do, or mill someone who's got a graveyard animation deck and risk that being going bad too. There's no downside to Spawning Pit. Like, worst case, you just put counters on it you don't use, but spend one mana to remove them and make a 2/2 colorless spun artifact creature token. It's making you a body that you can maybe sack to cause something else. I think this is a perfect deck for it, but I think it's a good card in general that gets kind of passed over sometimes.
I think Mimic Vat might actually do some work in this deck too. Granted, a lot of his creatures make tokens, but if you could Mimic Vat something and every turn make another thing that makes more tokens or something to sacrifice to Krav the Unredeemed or to any of your sack outlets.
Well, I will say this about Mimic Vat. Even if your deck doesn't take advantage of Mimic Vat, it's very rarely a bad card.
Right. Because you can take your opponent's stuff too.
Right. Like, even if it's just an accidental thing, like, oh, I'm going to put it in a deck, it almost always is pretty decent. So in this deck where you're doing a lot of sacrifice and reanimation, maybe it's even better. Anything else for artifacts jumps out at you guys? Phyrexian Totem is just neat.
Yeah, it is.
I like seeing old cards that pop up in decks where they usually don't get much play. For those who don't know, it's a mana rock. You can tap to add a black to your mana pool, or you can spend two and a black to turn it into a 5/5 black horror artifact creature token until end of turn. And whenever it's dealt damage, if it's a creature, sacrifice that many permanents. So you have to risk sacrificing stuff, but it's a mana rock that, you know, worst case scenario, it's a 3-mana mana rock. It's a monolith.
If you have a grave packed out.
Right,
and you
exactly.
Just swing with it, people are like, oh, I ain't blocking that.
For sure.
Right.
Yeah, I like it in this deck. It's not a bad card, but I like it a lot here. Enchantments. Speaking of Grave Pact and Dictate of Erebos,
yep.
They are both in here.
They're best buddies.
They tend to be very good friends. Attrition, to bring stuff back. Conspiracy. Is that to turn thralls to be not thralls so you can keep making them?
Yes.
I'm guessing? Okay. Which I like. That's a clever use of that card in this deck. Usually you're trying to make something, a type that you can gain advantage from. This time you're trying to do it. You're making them away from that creature type.
Right.
So that's clever. I like that a lot. A Gate to Phyrexia, we kind of mentioned. It's an old enchantment from Antiquities. 2 black, sacrifice a creature, destroy target artifact. Unfortunately, it says, activate this ability only during your upkeep, only once per turn. But you're making so many thralls in this deck that basically during your upkeep, you can kill an artifact that someone else controls and hopefully get a trigger off of, you know, Grave Pact or whatever.
Yep.
I asked about this card. He says it's fine. It's not like an all-star in the deck at all, but he said it solves problems sometimes, and we had a bit of a conversation about it because I had bought one when I had my Draenor deck, and I put it in the deck right before I took the deck apart.
Okay.
So I never got to cast it. So I was like really curious to see how well it worked. And he said, it's fine. It's not amazing. It's fine. It's also the kind of card I like to see in decks. Like, I love seeing someone
weird.
Play. Yes, absolutely. So even as long as it's fine, that will be good enough for me. Being able to use that card and kind of show off a weird thing that no one's ever seen before is always fun. I like Vampiric Rites a lot in decks. I think that card is underplayed.
So good.
It's good because this is a token-based deck that you want to sack creatures off. Especially with Endrixar, you want to get rid of the Thralls.
Yeah.
So you can keep pumping more out.
It's only one black to cast, and it's, you know, two mana to sack a creature to gain a life and draw a card. In this deck, it's a mana sink to end a turn. You're like, oh, I might as well kill a few Thralls, and since I'm going to cast a creature this turn anyway, there's no downside to it. How about instants or sorceries?
Corpse Dance is an interesting include.
I was curious about that one. This is a pretty creature-thick deck. There's 32 creatures. Corpse Dance is an instant, buyback 2, so basically you can either spend 3 mana to put the top creature card of your graveyard onto the battlefield, and it gains haste, exile at the beginning of the next end step, or you can spend 2 more, so 5 total, to buy that back and do that each turn. But the way it's worded, the creature gains haste and exile at the beginning of the next end step. If it's dead by then, which it will be in this deck because you have so many sack outlets, you can keep doing it every turn.
Yep.
The weird part is it's the top creature card of your graveyard. So you have to maintain graveyard order. And that's not always...
All you naughty commander players
right.
that don't do that.
So you have to keep your graveyard in the correct sequence. It's not like you can go grab any card that's most convenient for you. I should have asked him about this one, how well that works too, because I like the card, but I think that is a bigger hindrance than most people realize.
Sorceries, you just have your board wipes and a tutor.
Mutilate, Mono Black, Damnation, that's what you run if you can. A couple of tutors. Victimize is a good card. Creatures is pretty deep though. 32 creatures.
Yep.
They're all, for the most part, ones that I would run. Blood Artist is always good. You know, that's kind of a win con unto itself if you get the right combination going. You have Max's boy Krav in here.
Krav's in here. Sadisi Undead Vizier's in here.
Fleshbag Marauder to get a little more sack action going on, make everyone else sacrifice a creature. Steel Hellkite was the one I was like, which is always a fine card, but I always feel like it kind of underperforms in decks.
I wonder if it's in here for enchantment removal.
Maybe. I guess your mono black needs something.
Yep.
Yeah.
My favorite card.
Yeah.
The Flesh Eater Imp. I'm loving this card in this deck.
Sacrifice a creature, it gets +1. Ooh. Yeah.
It has infect.
Man, yeah. Wow, yeah. You're just going to kill somebody with that thing.
Yeah. If you have any of your Grave Pact abilities out and you're just like, oh, sack all these tokens to him. You sack all these creatures. You don't have any more blockers anymore. Pew, pew.
four mana for a 2/2, flying and infect. Sacrifice a creature, Flesh Eater Imp gets +1/+1 to end a turn. So I've seen this in a few different decks, but never in a deck that's making a ton of Thralls before. This is a, talking about a perfect deck for a card, this is a perfect deck for Flesh Eater Imp. You are very often going to cast this, and if you're allowed to swing with it, someone's going to die.
Yep. And you always pick the least scary person on the board.
The least scary? Well, why is that?
Yep.
Because they're going to kill you later if you don't.
Sure, that's true. They're playing Sphinxes, definitely.
Because Flesh Eater Imp's going to die on the next turn, someone's going to kill it.
Right.
So kill the one person who you know is going to end up catching up to you later.
So any final thoughts on this deck?
I was kind of looking for... I was trying to find targeted graveyard hate when I was looking at this deck.
Okay.
Because you don't want the mass grave hate because you need your graveyard for some of the enchantments and Corpse Dance. So I would maybe suggest like a Leyline of the Void or like Agent of Erebos. He doesn't run a lot of enchantments, but you know, if you can get 2 or 3 activations off of it and take out your opponent's graveyards and then sack it to something or just keep recurring it, it might do okay.
Or even like a Nalil Spellbomb.
Yeah.
Or something like that. It wouldn't hurt to have one or two more cards that Scavenger Grounds. There is a Bajuka Bog, but Scavenger Grounds never hurts.
Yep.
I felt like I'd maybe have a little more draw.
Yeah, I had that as well.
I don't know what specific, like Skull Clamp's great, and maybe he has enough tutors he can routinely go get Skull Clamp. But if you lose that Skull Clamp, things are you're kind of in a dire situation then. I would like maybe a little more draw. I don't know.
This is a good deck for Costly Plunder.
Right, yeah.
I mean, 2 mana, sack a dude, draw 2.
Or what's the, is it Agent of Bolas? where a creature, when it comes into play, you
Disciple
sacrifice.
Disciple of Bolas.
Disciple Bolas. It also has a sacrifice clause built in it, so it kind of fits the deck's theme and draws you a few cards. That would be a decent one to have here as well. Overall, I like the deck quite a bit. I think it feels relatively tightly tuned, but I also think it's oddball enough to be interesting, and that's a good combination in a deck, I think.
I'll agree with that. Yeah, it looks very interesting to play, and maybe one day we'll get to meet him and play against it.
Yes, I'm hopeful. Chris, final thoughts?
I love it. I want to kill someone with that imp so bad. That's just like my dream right now is just like the perfect scenario of having that thing out and just roar.
Boom. Well, Max, you know what? You're writing in Krav deck.
Is
that what you're thinking?
That's literally why I'm giggling like a schoolgirl over here. Oh, Krav's off the field. I guess I'll play Flesh Eater Imp
instead. I guess I'll do some with all these tokens, yep. I guess, if I have to.
I guess I'll take Tainted Strike out of the deck.
Yeah. Thank you very much for submitting the deck, John. We appreciate it. It's a fun deck to see, and I want to play you at some point in time if we are remotely near one another at a GP. So we will find you if we're going to be close, and we'll play a game for sure.
Yep. You just introduce yourself, and I'll make sure that I'm playing Sigarda, Host of Herons, or right, something exactly, like that.
Right. For a side note question, and this is something you guys can kind of think of maybe for next week, or unless you have an answer today, are there any other cards like Sunforge that you don't like that you think are worth examining again? And we can put this on Twitter for our users as well. So like cards that you initially dismissed that you want to maybe take a closer look at. We can do another single card show down the road too if there's one like this you want us to talk about. So this is a question that you don't have to answer on the air, you two either. Just think about it. See if there's one that you guys want to do. I was actually maybe thinking Rift, but we can talk about it off mic here.
I can bash Rift for an hour.
So yeah, could I.
I probably could too. All right. Until then, I am Dana.
I'm Max.
And I'm Chris.